Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Welcome to the Shrimp and Sevrette Show, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts and delivered by DoorDash.
Shrimpy, how's it going? Welcome back. I see your background is a little different. I see family in the background. What's going on right now?
Yeah, just got back to Fulton, New York. It's been a heck of a, it's been a whirlwind of a couple of days. So traveled back from Bled, Slovenia to Fulton, New York, and just got back here. So I'm back in mom and dad's house and getting some family time in. So my daughter's first time seeing her grandparents in 2 years. So she's excited to be back. She's all fired up. And yeah, it's a whirlwind of getting, whirlwind getting back, man. It's never easy traveling.
I just stayed in London this weekend. We played a golf tournament this weekend with one of our buddies, Brad Beer. He used to officiate us in the OHL.
Beersy.
Yeah, we had a good time. It was, we played at Highland, just a two-man best ball. We had a pretty good day one, and day two was not as good, but we did after day one. We went to the keg, watched the game five of the Stanley Cup Finals. So it was pretty entertaining. Obviously Tampa had won, and I moved on since then. Obviously Colorado has won. They're now the Stanley Cup champions. But you were talking to me earlier about travel. Like, I know we were going to talk about it in the show about how teams travel in all different leagues, but give me a little lowdown on the travel from Latvia back to Fulton, New York.
Yeah. So, well, that's my wife and daughter got up. They were in Latvia while I was in Bled, Slovenia, and we met up in Vienna. So they took an early morning flight to the Vienna, got in around whatever, 9 or 10. And then I took a 3-hour drive from Bled, Slovenia to Vienna, met them up at the airport. And then right out of the gate, delays started. So our flight got pushed back and the windows were small. We had 50 minutes in Amsterdam, which that was the layover. And we were already like, that's not enough. You start reading all the reports, you know, they say you got to have like an hour and a half at least. So we're sweating. And then, we got on the plane and they were like, you're probably not going to make your flight in Amsterdam to get to Atlanta. So we were sitting there waiting on that. And it was looking like we were going to get a night in Amsterdam and then fly out the next day. They ended up pushing the flight back to Atlanta, from Amsterdam to Atlanta, an hour so all the people could make it. So then we wind up getting stuck in Atlanta. We missed our connector from Atlanta to Syracuse. So we got into the hotel at like 1 o'clock in the morning, 1:30 in the morning, and then had to be back at the airport at 5:30 in the morning. And, you know, and all that with a 4-year-old and, you know, time change, jet lag, all that good stuff, like my wife and I trying to lug, you know, three bags and a hockey bag, hockey sticks, and we brought the stroller because we knew that it's really not fair to ask Stella to run through the airport. So it was a mess. And then, you know, whatever, we got on the flight this morning from Atlanta to here, and it's good to be back. But man, it's tiring. It's so taxing, you know. It's so hard to travel with a kid and all that other stuff and the elements and the emotional stuff of like flight delays, cancellations. Okay, what about hotel and how are we gonna get to the hotel? Blah 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 blah. I'm sure people can relate to that, but yeah, it was a bit of a cluster. So it's good to be kind of relaxing. And then once I got sat down and just getting ready for the podcast.
You know, well, I'm glad you're right back into it. Yeah, glad you're back in North America. How long are you here for?
He'd be here for 2 months. So yeah, long stint.
You're jumping on the ice. You brought your gear. Like, you wheeling everyone around on the ice, or are you teaching?
Yeah, my brother and I actually were going to do something. I'm throwing on a shooting and stick handling clinic here in Syracuse called Astro Mitts Masterclass. Astro Mitts Stick Handling and Shooting Masterclass. kind of connecting it into my Space Force hockey project with the NFT project. So it's going to be really cool. And it's, I haven't got a chance to really do stuff back here as far as this, you know, doing clinics and camps in probably 10, 12 years. So it's, I'm excited. A lot of people I've been gone have been, when are you going to go back and do something, you know? And it's been hard. I've been all over the world. So it's good to be back and doing something in the hockey community, not just back here to see mom and dad. So I'll have that. And then I'm doing a shooting and stick handling masterclass again with the Windy City Storm out in Chicago. Then I have a combine camp in Rhode Island, August. And then I'm going out to LA to see a player of mine, Troy Negus. And we're going to put a little camp together out in LA. And then from there, I fly up to Vancouver for another week to work with a kid, Jordan Gavin. Really cool, really good little prospect. I'm excited to get up there doing the same thing, doing a little bit of privates and then doing a camp session sort of thing. So it's going to be a busy couple months, and hopefully in between that, get a chance to come up there to London, Ontario and get the golf sticks going with you.
And also if you're selling like world tour shirts, t-shirts like with every destination on it, I'll take one, man. But no, it's good. I mean, hockey's well, the Memorial Cup game's on, Memorial Cup final, Hamilton squeaked through into actually they squeaked through in overtime. I don't want to say squeak through. They played very well, but they ended up, they're in the finals with the host team in St. John. So it'll be exciting to watch that. Rarely does the Memorial Cup finish after the NHL. So hopefully there's going to be a lot of eyes on that game, and hopefully it's a pretty good game and an outcome. But getting back to the NHL, like I you know, watching game six at home for me, but in Tampa was, you know, the third, you know, I think everyone thought the same thing come third period, like the second intermission, it's like, okay, Tampa's going to put the gas pedal down. Right. And it just didn't really happen. And you're like, you're waiting for it and waiting for it, and waiting for it. And I thought in game two, Colorado played a stellar game, like 7-0, but it could have been greater than that. But in the clincher game in the third period, I thought that was the best they have played. Like they were stymie, like you couldn't get anything. Like Tampa was flipping. It was almost like the lead change was the opposite way, where Colorado was just hounding them, and Tampa couldn't really get anything going. Like I thought they did a really good job. And I guess that's sort of how it is when you sort of, you know, quote unquote, smell blood and you're leading, and you know that we don't let up a goal in the next 18 minutes, the next 14 minutes, that like we're Stanley Cup champions. So then I also don't, you know, some people are like, well, they're tired. Tampa's tired. And like, if you got four periods of hockey left, you're not tired, right? It's just they played stellar. And then now it comes out, the injury report, right? Like, let me get the Rolodex here of the scroll of all these guys. Like, you know, Point had a quad tear, Bellemare MCL, Shirelli AC, a joint and AC dislocation, McDonough finger, all mangled up, probably broken. Kucherov MCL, Hagel fractured foot, Paul AC sprain and an MCL, Corey Perry AC strain on his shoulder. Some of the guys need surgery, but it just sort of shows, like to the viewer just watching, you know, why is that guy not playing his heart? Well, he's not playing his heart because he's got a broken foot. He's playing as hard as he can, right? Like, just it goes to show how hard it is to win. And I haven't seen Colorado's injury report. I obviously saw Niskushin, if that's how you say his name, getting carted off with the, looked like a broken foot or black and blue foot, couldn't really walk on it. So I'm sure there's more. Obviously, like you said, Kadri with a thumb, but it's a battle of attrition, right? Like it's, you have there, obviously I would say arguably those were the two best teams in the finals. I know Florida was a stellar team, but everyone sort of earmarked Tampa to get another run at it. And I think everyone sort of said Colorado will be the team out of the West to win. But what you want to touch on about injuries and getting to the finals and trying to stay healthy and battling hard and blocking shots. And, you know, that's why we love the sport, but it's a grueling task when you look at that. They have probably a handful of months here to then turn around and get back at it for, I think, season openers early October. Right.
That's the biggest thing too, is like the turnaround. You know, this isn't like a lot of players, it's not like their last stand. And, you know, for some it is, but for a lot of players, it's not. You, again, like you just touched on, like there's 2 months, 2.5, maybe 3 months. What do we have? Yeah. July, August, middle of September training camp. There's 2.5 months really to recoup. And some of these injuries take time to heal and fully heal. Then you got to think about, like, you know, while those players are healing up and trying to bandage up or whatever, bandage up, heal up and get back to par, the teams that didn't get in are like going like madmen in the off season, right? Like in the gym, like getting gains on the ice, pushing the pace, like getting ice time. So it's such a totally different mentality, right? Like, and then again, for these teams that make it deep, like to come back in September, beginning of October, drop the puck, it's like, that's a quick turnaround. And these, you know, like these injuries are, not to say they're too serious, but they take time to heal. And, you know, then you got to start bumping shoulders again in October. It's pretty crazy to think about. And like you touched on as well, it's why I think everyone has, there's so much passion for the game of hockey, how tough it is, even though it's not like the old school barbaric ways of bench clearing brawls and, you know, tomahawking each other with hockey sticks, but it's still a battle. It's still really tough, very physical game. And you see the athlete, shot blocks, guys with all the, I mean, it is amazing after. It's always to see the injury report come out. It's nuts. It's crazy to see what guys were actually going through. But you know what it's like. I think, you know, my last year playing pro in Salzburg for Red Bull, like I had 2 concussions in playoffs. And like, there was, my wife was at home, like, you're not playing. I'm like, yeah, you're not going to not let me play. Like, there's no way I'm not playing. You know what I mean? Like, play all year for this. And that's not even the Stanley Cup. We always have that passion for the championship, drive to win, passion to win, whatever you want to call it. But like, it's, guys will go through anything to win. And I think that's what makes this game so special. But Kadri's thumb to me looked mangled. Like when I saw a picture of when he went to get the cup, but you like see his stitches and the brace that he had on his thumb. And watching that game, like he was unbelievable in that game. Mm-hmm. He was such a big factor in that game, played so well positionally, played, he was attacking the net all the time, and he's doing it basically with one hand, you know, and it's his top hand that had the problem, which is, that's where your everything goes through. You can't really, you let off the grip on that hand with, as a lefty. So it was, you know, it was unbelievable to watch what these guys sacrificed. And Colorado was awesome. Like they played such a good system.
The whole series was really good. Like I thought the game, what was it? Game 5. When Tampa won, obviously we were wanting it to extend, right? You don't want it to end the series to end that quick. But I thought that game itself was like, if you're a fan of hockey and it didn't matter which team you're cheering for, like that was an awesome, there was energy, there was chances, like there was body con, like it was a well-rounded game to watch as a viewer, you know, like I thought, and then even the final game, you know, like there was a ton of emotion. Colorado played superb in the third, but Tampa played well as well, right? Like it's a one goal game we're talking about here, right? Mm-hmm. And then obviously like our good buddy and Corey going to his third final and not winning, I obviously felt for him because he just seems to be that player that it doesn't matter what happens in the season, like come playoff time, like he's one of the top players on the team. I think he finished 5th, maybe on the team in points, and he would have been up there higher in goals for, doesn't play as much as a top line player, but just seems to bring it all the time. So just to sort of see the emotion in him and Blake Gane, his son, in the stands was obviously hard being a friend, a close friend of him. But I think, you know, he's got another year left in Tampa. I think Tampa, not really much is going to change for them. They're going to be, they still have their strong nucleus there. They got great goaltending, a stellar defenseman. I'm going to touch on Kucherov in the video aspect later on about how he's very similar to Alexander Mogilny in my mind. And then I guess switching topics a little bit, they just announced the Hall of Fame induction, inductees. And again, for like the 13th year in a row, Alexander Mogilny wasn't on it. Right. So he was a player for me. Like my favorite player was always Pavel Bure, and my younger brother's was, Alexander Mogilny. I don't really understand what the knock is on this guy. Like you can go down the list and he could be either entry as a player or as a builder. It sounds somewhat ludicrous to be a builder, but the guy was the first Russian to ever play in the NHL.
Like he defected, right? Is that what they called it back then? He defected.
Yeah, he defected in 89. He's 20 years old. I think they were at World Championship in Stockholm, Sweden, I think where it was, but like he's got over a thousand points in the NHL in under 1,000 games played. He's over a point per game player in 16 years. Like that's a good rate that you're running at, right? In one season, he had 76 goals. He tied Timo Salani in goals with 76, and he played 7 less games than Timo, right? He played 77 games, 76 goals. You're a goal a game. Like who does this, right?
Yeah.
And he's the only player, actually only Forsberg, Lindros, Bure, and Jager have a higher points per game in their career than him since 2007. Right. He's a triple gold winner. He was the first Russian captain. Like the list goes on and on. He's got better numbers than Alfredson in Korea. I jumped down like the bit of the rabbit. And you can speak a little bit more to him. Like you're from the Buffalo area. He came over right to Buffalo.
He was massive in the Buffalo, like for the Buffalo Sabres, like him and Hasek were the face of the franchise and created so much. What's the right word? Buzz around the team, so much excitement for fans. Like his jersey was one of the fan favorite jerseys. He was amazing. Like he was so good. Like he was so much better than players back then. You know what I mean? Like you watch him and he stuck out, like his skill level, puck control, his body control, the way he could take over a game. Like it was special. He was a special, special player. And the stats back it up. It's not just something along the lines of, I like that guy. He should be in the Hall of Fame. Like you go to numbers and the numbers add up too. Like the both sides, you know, the eye test and the stats test add up. And it really, yeah, in my opinion as well, I don't see how he keeps getting passed up. Like, and to your point, like as a builder, like tell me that's not knocking down a huge wall for what became unbelievable in Detroit. And with their, you know, they had the Russian five there and the guys that gave Russian players the courage to, you know what, that's possible. Like that's huge. That's massive. You know, I think changes the face of the NHL in some regard, style of play. And
well, look at how many Russians are elite in the NHL right now. Like Vasilevsky is arguably the best goalie, right? Kucherov is one of the best players. Ovechkin's probably the best goal scorer. Those are three Russians that.
Yeah, probably Ovechkin is the best goal scorer.
But you know what I mean? And this was the guy that opened up the channel back to North America for all these players. And like, if you get a chance, I jumped down the rabbit hole this week and I watched, there's a Sportsnet does a really good segment on it. It's actually on YouTube. You can watch it. It's called The Defector. And it tells a story about how Don Luce and Jerry Meehan was a GM of the team and Don Luce was the director of player development, I think, or something like that. And how they went about drafting him, right? He was arguably one of the best players in the draft and they ended up getting him, I think, in the fifth round. And everyone's sort of like, this guy's not coming, right? And they're like, okay, we'll see. And then it tells the whole story about how they went over. They went over to Stockholm while the world championship was going on. And they essentially, like they say, kidnapped, but they had to get him out of the country. Like they got all the paperwork through the embassy and they jumped from hotel to hotel because they were in fear that they were being followed. And in fact, they actually were. So they went from hotel to hotel, jumping around so that no one like, and it's funny that it was not funny, but I'm sure it would have been scary as hell when, you know, arguably the KGB is trying to hunt down Alexander Mogilny and the two guys trying to get him out. Right. So it's only like 20 some odd minutes long. It's actually a pretty good watch online. So I got into that and I couldn't believe, like, I didn't know the detail of it all. Like you just think, okay, you just hop on a plane and go. Like, no, there was a lot of like maneuvering that needed to happen at the right time. And they ended up getting him over. And it was, I think he stayed with Don Luce at his house. Near the end of the story, they get a Russian phone call or someone comes to the door or something. And Alexander's like, no, we don't talk. It's a guy that has a bit of a Russian accent. And he's just like, no, we don't, we're not talking to this guy. Like who knows who it could have been. Right. But yeah, as a 20-year-old kid to leave your family and everything, like we know as players that played in the OHL, it's tough to leave your family, but we're leaving our family for a couple hour drive down the road to an OHL team, right? Like he's leaving his family from the Soviet Union in at the age of 20. And he's a big marquee name in the country and comes to North America. Like, how scary is that for your family? Like, will you ever see them again? Are they, you know?
Yeah, backfire, back push on that. And then the other thing is, too, is the mentality back then was absolutely against Russians and against European players. Like, it wasn't a warm market for him to come into, per se, coming over to North America, NHL. You know, that's, you see, yeah, again, like the mentality back then was like, there was so much hatred in hockey towards each other, and in politics as well. There's plenty of stuff going on around the world in that time. So there's so much that goes into that. The courage that it took for him to do that was insane. Yeah. You see stuff like, even the, you know, not to dive down too much into this, but this year, like, everyone expecting the Russian players to speak up about what was going on. But in my opinion, it wasn't fair to put them in that place because they have family back there. Like, that's, and what are their words going to say? Like, what are their words do? Their words could have a backlash of real consequences, like scary consequences. And the words, you know, to jump on one team, I thought it was a little bit crazy during that, you know, when this stuff started in the world, what's happening right now. Again, not to dive too far into it and take our show into a political one. I thought it was a little bit crazy to ask those players to do that. But for him to do that at that time, it's insane. But yeah, he should. I mean, now we're going into to that side of it. But that would be for the argument for him as a builder, for the stats side of it and the entertainment side of it, what he did for the NHL. I don't know. And I don't know if we're going to get the answer, but like, it's crazy that he keeps getting passed over. Because, and it's like hard to throw Alfredson, like, why is Danny Alfredson in there over, you know, but like, that's what happens. Like, someone goes in there like, well, this guy actually had better stats, better numbers, was, in my opinion, I guess it's then, what is that worth? But like, McGillney was such a such a big impact to the NHL, and he just, they keep snubbing him. Yeah. I don't know who's going to let off the gas there on that one, but they should probably consider, yeah, you know.
And this guy was like so good. Like, he, and I look at, when I'm watching Kucherov, like, Kucherov really reminds me of him. Like, there's segments of his game where he's dynamically super fast and offensive. He's very creative with the puck. He sees the ice very well. Like, there was a shift he had on the power play, where he had 13 touches, 13 passes, one shot attempt, two zone entries. Like, it was just masterpiece, you know. Like, he set up Stamkos with a one timer. Then he takes a one timer from the half wall. Then the puck gets out of the zone. He comes in, he gets a zone entry. He has got no speed. He makes an unbelievable play at the line to gain entry, which is, we know, on a power play or penalty kill, it's very difficult to do.
Broke the pressure. Threw a guy's legs, like, tiny, yeah, hole, hit it with like a backhand behind the back. Like, it wasn't a hoper or a guesser. Like, no, that's like, he knows what he's, elite.
He knows elite what level. He's doing. Then he recoups back to his half wall position, which is usually on his one time side, and, you know, rags the puck down towards the goal line, rips it goal line, recovers the puck again, possesses it well again, then looks to go maybe like a seam pass or a high tip to like a parry, or even if it went through to Stamkos, doesn't work out. Anyways, back out again, another entry, no speed. They fire it to him. It's like, get us in the zone, buddy. Kicks it out, gets in the zone, right? Ends up creating another chance where it's like a low shot tip in front. Then it comes back up top, and he does that like pat, and it looks like he's going to unload a bomb. And it's like a fake shot, hard pass sort of through the seam to Stamkos, which doesn't convert on anything. And then again, they recover it. He tries it again. They get a stick on it or whatever. But they end up, anyways, I think they keep the puck in the zone. And then at that point, Colorado's like, you know what? We're just going to overplay the hell out of this guy. Like, everything's going through him. That's how it's happening. So they start to overplay him on the half wall. He's got minimal to no time. They get on the puck. He one touches it down low to the goal line for like a parry attempt at the crease for a whistle. And it's like, in a matter of like a minute and 45 seconds, this guy controlled, like, or created a ton of chances for them. They didn't score, but it just like shows how dynamic this guy is. And it's like, as a defender, it's hard to predict what he's doing. Like, I think it takes a lot to be on his line, because you have to always be ready for the puck. Like, he's going to rip it to you from his backhand, pulling it off the wall on his backhand. Like, there's no preparation in his his thought process to try to get you that puck, and which is hard for a defender, right? Like if the puck's coming to him, you can sometimes see, okay, this guy's not in a passing position or this, and it doesn't matter where this puck is in his like little halo or like hula hoop. He's firing it hard and on the tape to someone for a chance.
I think it's like, for me, with him, he reacts to the situation, and he reads and reacts very well. And he's, that's the thing. I think the difference between him and other players that play that position, other, you know, players that don't understand that position do things that they saw someone else do. Kucherov understands. And I remember we went back a couple sessions or a couple episodes ago, talking about categories of the zone. You ever pay attention? He, in category two, he stands all the time, right? So what he creates is a big box, a big window of predictability in some regard, because it's in that category of the ice, that little sliver, that little cheese of ice. Inside that cheese of ice, he understands the space completely.
And in section two, you're talking like that one timer spot traditionally on the 1-3-1, right?
Yes. So if you drew if you could draw a line from the goal post to the wall, this line would go from the goal post and it would come underneath the faceoff dot to the wall. The next line would come from the goal post and it would go up all the way through the zone and it would go towards the neutral zone and it would meet at the blue line. So that little sliver of cheese there. And he's always in that spot. So like Stamkos stands on the other side, or Obi. So it's category two technically. But inside of that space, that's where all of his manipulation comes from. And it's really the read and react off of what the D does. So there's not a set play there. It's like where the D's toe caps are, where they, if they take the wrong angle, he's got option A. If the D does this, he's got option B. There's always like, there's like three options on every single play: cross seam, one timer, one touchdown low. So he's always got escapes and outs. One thing I like about him in the comparison of with McGillney is it's almost like they also held the stick in the same position, on like how they hold their stick and how they manage the puck, or not manage the puck, how they handle the puck. It looks a lot similar. And it, like, to bring that comparison together, how smooth they are with the puck, with their body, with the puck, but also with their body control. You know what I mean? Like their moves and their body always like kind of come together in harmony. It's like poetry, man. It's so smooth. Their steps, the step work, footwork that they have to their moves are very calculated, and they're silky. They always have escapes, and you can never really run them or run at them, because they always had escapes. But just wanted to touch on that, on your points, what you saw in Kucherov's power play time there, and kind of explain it a little bit deeper. Having played that dot spot, you know, through my career, it's really, if you can explain that to players and help them see that, give them those options, that hockey IQ side of it. So, give them the reads. What's the play when the D does this? And this is why you and I do our video work with our players and stuff like that. It's really to help them understand the whys of that. It's not impossible to do what Kucherov does. It's possible to do if you can understand the reasoning, what works, what doesn't work, and what the reads are. If you understand the reads, the processing time speeds up, and then the proper play can be made, effectively. Well, so he's,
yeah, one of his greatest, like, he's got a lot of great assets. He's one of the best players in the league, but one of his greatest skill sets, I think, is to be able to sort of pull that puck off of a rimmed puck. So say a Perry has the puck on the goal line in the offensive zone, it's sort of in his corner, and it's just like rimmed up to him on the half wall. Yeah. And as a lefty, he's going to receive that on his backhand. And as a defender, I'm going, oh yeah, I'm going to pressure him. He's got to receive it on his backhand, corral it, and I'm just going to apply a ton of pressure on him. And he will make a pass like with his first touch of the puck. It's not like he pulls it off and he receives it and handles it, whatever. It's like it touches his stick and it's like a one-time pass either to the bumper or like spun to up top to Hedman, or like, and he's not shy or afraid or scared or timid or anything to rip that from that positioning, facing the glass, backhander through the seam to a Stamkos, right? Like, and I think that's what makes that power play so dynamic, is the unpredictability to the defending group on what this guy's doing, where the teammates are always aware and know that something's going to happen when this guy touches the puck, right? Evidently in that one power play shift we showed, that he had a one-timer from his spot. He had a one-timer up to Stamkos up top. He had a low play to the goal line to Palat, a shot tip attempt to Perry, through the seam twice to Stamkos on that fake one-timer, hard pass through, a down low attempt to Perry for a stuff. Like, those are pretty much every, like when we run practice, power play practice, you run through every option. Like he did it all in a minute and 40, and he had two zone entries, like seamlessly cutting through, like knifing through, like there's not even defenders there, but it was something to watch. And I just can't help but think that he's very, very similar to McGillney. I don't know Kucherov personally, but I'm sure that if you were to ask him, he probably would have McGillney as one of his idols. But and I guess it goes back again to just why McGillney isn't in the Hall of Fame. But it's been 13 years. You wonder if he'll get in, but I question why it isn't. But and even with all of his talents, you know, like an offensive creativity that he was having, the third period for Tampa, they just seemed to be smothered. Like Colorado did such an amazing job of throwing the blanket on Tampa on any type of rush attempt or breakout or anything. And I know that you had wanted to touch on their tactics in the third period and sort of what make them hold the lead there.
Yeah, I thought Colorado played unbelievable. Their forecheck was insane. It was very in sync, and there's, you know, small details on reattacking, reloading, you know, use all those hockey words, buzzwords. The one guy that stuck out to me that was unbelievable was Nazem Kadri. He played unbelievable in that game. He kept reloading, reattacking. And to your point, they just smothered them. You can see their positioning. They get the puck low. They invested very, very well in getting the puck deep, giving the D no options. And then you can see on a couple examples how they were hounding that puck and trapping Tampa Bay in with no options out. And there was nothing where you could say Tampa could have done anything better. You know, Tampa turns the puck over, or Tampa gets the puck back, tries to start breaking the puck out. We can see a couple examples, Kadri hounding the puck, F2 getting over the top of their middle option for Tampa. And then you can see the one option where Tampa goes D2D, Colorado reloads, repressures, gives them absolutely nothing. And then the guy who started the hounding, Kadri, gets a scoring chance right back, winds up getting a breakaway out of it, scoring chance. And then that turns into another 30 to 40 second shift of offensive zone pressure. They were just reloading, investing, and playing together. And that hockey is close to impossible to play against when you're a team trying to come back when you're down. And they just keep putting the puck low, reattacking, keeping a good F3, pressure cooker. There's no options. There's no plays to be made. And whenever Colorado would touch the puck, they would just get it low, hound it. And that was some of the best, I thought, systematic play I'd seen in a long time. And then, you know, the other thing is that people are going to say, like, why don't you play like that all the time then? Well, it's very hard to play that way. You know, it's you can't play that way for 82 games in a season. You really can't. It takes a lot of energy. I will say that playing in Sweden, that was something pretty close to that in Skellefteå. We played that way where it was pressure all over the ice, but it is very, very tiring. And it's a much different game. But and just a couple examples here with Colorado, how they played in the third period, smothering them, their system work, their commitment to each other, commitment to the team game. Mm-hmm. And it paid off because Tampa got nothing out of it. There was no options either. Like the only thing that Tampa could do was launch it down, and then Colorado still had coverage there. So I think there was so much to learn from that for coaches, for players, when you watch that, when you have a lead, what that means to commit to the team and play responsible hockey. You can see in these clips, at no point did any player in Colorado take a risk of one-on-one, trying to do a little bit extra, trying to be an eye guy on a team game. It was invest in the team, you know, because the ultimate rewards at the end of this, right, the Stanley Cup. But I thought this was a great, you know, couple of examples of what Colorado did so well. And it wasn't this was won by Colorado 100%. Like they played better. They were the better team 100%.
I think it was one of the better playoff series. And I do think, like you said, in the third period, I think you pulled a couple clips from the third, but the whole third period as an entire capsule was, I don't say dominated by Colorado. It just, Tampa couldn't do anything. You know, like you said, Colorado had very strong F1 presence. Their F2 would go down the wall, taking away any quick up option. Anything D2D, F3 jumped on it. Like you said, if it countered, the F3 would retreat, or they'd always fill through the middle. If they did happen to get it up, that high forward, the responsibly high forward, was always tracking the puck. It makes it easier on the D when you're getting back pressured so hard that you literally have to be making plays at full speed. It was pretty remarkable. And it wasn't until maybe like the last 3 minutes of the third where Tampa started to generate some chances. Right.
Kucherov had one there from Pilata, one timer. That was an unbelievable save. That was a great chance at the towards the end.
Pairs got a 2-on-1, also made a little sauce over to Kucherov on his offhand one timer, and he made a play at the net, just sort of missed. But
that was that was sort of it. And he's sniffing it out. You can see even like the Landeskog dumps the puck in, hounds it. You got Kadri closing the wall, you got F3 reloading, and they just keep circling the wagons, giving them nothing, and it created so much chaos for Tampa. You could, you can see the one part, the winger started coming down for Tampa to kind of help the breakout. So then they're not even options up the ice, and the way that Kadri kept reloading on him and reloading and giving him nothing, the guy's got to make a cross ice pass on his backhand, and it turns into no offense for Tampa. So, I mean, it was very effective. Well executed, well deserved, fun to watch and hard to watch at the same time. Obviously we talk about Paris quite a bit, but would love to pull. We were pulling for our buddy, but that hockey that Colorado played was sick. And seeing Cal Makar win the MVP, like, well deserved. Like, we saw something special there in that player. 29 points in a playoffs. It's sick. Like, you don't see that much these days.
And you had alluded to Nas doing what, obviously winning the Stanley Cup, and he's had a rough go. Like, he was sort of the scapegoat in Toronto for a while, which I don't really understand. I think maybe Toronto would be wanting to have him back on their roster now, but what he had to deal with throughout the playoffs this year. I'm pretty happy for him. He's an unrestricted free agent. It'll be interesting to see where he goes. But the other thing I wanted to touch on was the coaching itself. Like, I had Jared Bednar as a coach for a year in St. Louis's organization, and I know John Cooper from obviously talking to Corey, and that both guys are just really good people. You want to play for them. They enjoy having conversations. There's no hierarchy of, you can't speak to me because I'm the coach type thing. Like, they almost accept you as like, we're one of the boys here. Right. At least for when I played with Bednar, I thought he did a tremendous job of including his players in the conversations. So it wasn't like, okay, this is what we're going to do. You do it now. It was like a conversation with, hey guys, what do you think if we do this? And then you grab the, a nucleus of the leadership group or more experienced players, and you just have an open discussion on, okay, well, if we do try that, then this is what's going to, and then you end up molding either a system, player, tactic based on not just the coach's hockey IQ, but the players that some will be in the Hockey Hall of Fame. Right. And I thought when I had him as a coach, I loved playing for him. I know Phil McRae, it was his rookie year. He was one of, if not his favorite coach, it was good to see. It's good to see him. Obviously hard for us to see our buddy Corey lose, but it was, to me, it was good to see him win. A good guy that has won at a lot of levels all the way up. You rarely see that.
Coast, AHL, NHL. I did the three tiers. It's pretty crazy.
It's rare that you see that happen. And I was just, really happy for him. He's a nice guy, soft spoken, warrants a lot of respect in the locker room. I think his peers think highly of him as well. And then if you go across the red line to Cooper, like at the end of the series, he brought up his entire staff again, right? Because there's a lot of guys that are behind the scenes that are doing video, sending players video clips and doing one-on-one stuff, skill stuff down low. Tampa being, a modern day sort of dynasty, and that coaching staff probably isn't going to be there next year, right? Which speaks wonders to what Tampa had as a core group of staff, when some of them might be gonzo coaching as a head coach elsewhere. Tampa had three or two or, more than one staff members worthy of being a head coach. And I just thought it was a unique and cool thing to do for Cooper. I know he did it after they had won the last two Stanley Cups. He brought out everyone to sort of show like, this is what makes it happen behind the scenes. And he did it again when they lost, right? It's like, this is, this is who we are. This is how we've gotten so good. And, you know, and almost, I don't say swan song, but I do believe that a few of the staff members may be on different teams next year, but I just thought it was really cool. And I do know that both guys speak well, they communicate with their players well, they're well-liked. So in that regard, it was really good to see. And again, talking about behind the scenes stuff and development, I know you were overseas. You just flew over from your development camp there, which it seemed online, it looked like it was very successful. And I think all the players that were involved, I think, would probably agree with my thought process and that they took a lot out of it. So, I mean, I'll give you a bit of a platform to go on about how good it felt to be a developer and how much you felt confident passing on your knowledge to the players in hopes to succeed in their hockey careers.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was an awesome event and it was a great opportunity for the players and it was a great opportunity all week for them to get some, you know, some sort of higher level coaching in some regard, like on a personal level. And then on the same time, get a chance to showcase. We had a really good success through the live stream with Elite Prospects. We got a lot of viewership on that. A lot of people tuned in. And then we actually have two players right now that are in talks with teams over here in North America. So that was the whole opportunity of that camp, was not just to be a normal summer camp. It was really for them to showcase themselves and have people tune in from North America to watch and find spots for them. You know, that's the big thing for me. I want to be a mentor, help these kids land and chase their dreams. I can't be all things at once, but that this camp gave me a chance to do that, be kind of I don't want to be an agent, but like offer them new opportunities and kind of I told them before the camp started, I'll set the dance floor. You guys got to show up and dance. And that was the truth. You know, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, we had live games and the kids played great. The first game was like one of those feeling out processes. And then I gave them kind of not an earful, but just like, hey guys, there's people watching, you know, this isn't a June skate. You know, people are watching. If you want to go places, it's time. So Wednesday they came out and it was really, you know, physical sort of playoff type hockey. And, you know, through the course of the week, we got a chance to do some video. I love the setting and it was awesome. We watched the game film from Monday night on Tuesday and we broke down some stuff and talked about the stuff. And it's just a great, I love the setup because again, it gives you, when you do summer camps, you're always talking about hypothetically what's happening in games and this is what's going to happen. But when you can do it in this sort of setting, like you play Monday and on Tuesday, you're watching it. And then you're talking about why you implement the drills that you implement. And you're like, this is it. You know what I mean? The wall sprints, the cut back on the dot and it's reattack the net. Here's exactly where it should have happened. And you didn't do it. Do you see why we do those drills? And it's like, okay, you know, light bulbs go off and that's development, right? And you can do it really on the spot. And then the chance to do it in Bled, Slovenia, it's like, you got to check this place out. It's unbelievable. It's beautiful. It's like out of a postcard. So it's all encompassing and we had a great week. Again, a couple of kids are getting some opportunities out of it now, which was my main goal. Like they just give them those chances and get people to see them. It's really gratifying to open up doors like that. So it was awesome. Plan on doing it again next year. For this next year, we're going to do it for 3 weeks. I have 2 weeks of boys in different age brackets and then 1 week of women. So it's really looking forward to that. I love the model. I love working with kids and again, giving them whatever I can from my side of it on a personal level, development wise, open, you know, just giving them those little details. Like we're talking about Kucherov running the half wall, you know, kind of like Tadek Mamutovic, showing him what the right decisions are, not doing things just because you saw him on TV. It's like, this is why he does that. And this is how you can do that yourself. Here's the manipulation piece. Like I really thoroughly enjoy that side of it. So, had fun. Now look like I've gone 12 rounds with Tyson. My eyes are heavy. It's ready to shut the brain off for a little bit, relax, and then get back into those things I mentioned earlier in the show. But yeah, it was an awesome time. So, and Elite Prospects was great. They live streamed it on their, through their channels on YouTube. And we had some great sponsors, BioSteel sponsored it. So the kids all had, you know, good drinks in the room and that little stuff makes them feel good, you know? And in between, I did some, in between periods, I did some color commentating, had some interviews. And it was hilarious, man. It was so awkward for both of us. The kids didn't know how to speak and I didn't know how to continue.
Yeah. But you know what though, that's just like development as a whole, right? Like I'm the same as you. Like when I finished playing, I wanted that hockey mentality, fill the void option, and I didn't want to play. So that's what sort of led me into coaching and development. And there's nothing better than being on the ice and, you know, rimming pucks to a player and getting them to pull the puck off the wall and either take it to the net or make a nice little play to your low centerman. And then they do it in the game and they break out easy and go down and get a rush and they come off and they look at you like smiling, like, I did it. I'm like, I know. And now you have that forever. That skill that you just did that you keep working on, you sort of have that forever. So it was always great to the satisfaction you get from seeing a player sort of absorb like a sponge, your knowledge or your ideas and on what to do. And you know, I think you've done a great job and continue to do a great job. And like you said, the little things like that, whether it be BioSteel, Elite Prospects, Bauer, or even just the, you know, speaking, getting them interview savvy, right? Because at some point they're going to be having to speak to the media, and there's nothing worse than being nervous and not really getting what you want out. And then you leave the interview going, shit, I just sounded like an idiot, when you're really not, but you were just so nervous. So I commend you on doing all those whole rounded things to help them in their venture to be either in hockey or get a scholarship or move on. But it's a cool little process that I think you've started. And I think a lot of people will be looking forward to next year, and hopefully everyone on your world tour or the North American tour here that you're venturing on will think the same. But I think it's awesome what you're doing, and I'm trying to do something similar in this area. Obviously we're a little bit more of a condensed hotbed in the London, Ontario area, but it's always rewarding seeing players retain what you're trying to teach and implementing it in the game, or knowing that you get them a little bit more comfortable in front of a camera or in front of a mic or confident in speaking in public. I think those are all just life skills that you're able to pass on that serve well for them in all areas of their future. But speaking of future, our friends at PointsBet Canada, I'm sure will have a hockey futures board on who's going to win the Stanley Cup next year, right? It's obviously very early, that the draft is still upcoming. The free agency frenzy will happen, I'm sure. And I'm sure with the cap era, there's always some shuffling and trades going on. But if you were to bet, not knowing the odds, who are you sort of looking at as teams out of the East and the West that you'd want to sort of rest your hat on, that you think are going to be in a position to be in the semifinals, let's say, and contending for the Stanley Cup?
Ooh, I would say without any movement happening, I mean, obviously there's going to be some movement coming up here pretty soon. Draft's right around the corner. So tough to say, but as it sits now, I mean, I like the way the New York Rangers developed this year. I don't know if it's a long shot by saying that, but I like the way they played. I liked what they got on the back end, and this year's experience going to give them a lot of growth. And I, you know, there's a lot of chatter about them adding some pieces. They are probably one or two pieces away from being a real contender, but I like the way they played in the playoffs. I thought they were a very strong team. I would pick them out of the East. I don't know. You know, I think Pittsburgh's kind of getting a little bit older. They're usually the same thing with Washington. They're getting, you know, that core group's kind of getting a little bit older. It's getting tougher, but I don't know. I like New York personally. I don't know why Toronto's tough to pick. They obviously got names on the roster and they're an exciting team to watch, but I don't know. They kind of disappoint quite often when it comes down to the crunch time. So who would you take out of the East?
I think that division as a whole will be tough. You're going to probably have Toronto, Florida, and Tampa again contending, right? Like to get through, you're going to have to play. Someone's going to have to play both of those teams probably just to get through to put yourself in a position, right? So I think Toronto has some shuffling to do again. Like I said, I don't think any team has ever won the Stanley Cup with a someone on their salary on their cap making over $10 million. So I think it's going to be tough for Toronto. They're going to have to find some gems at low price. I think Tampa with Hedman and Vasilevsky, and you got their big line up front and some depth in Perry, and it's not much is going to change. I think they've built a really, from being down there, they've done a really good job of making that a destination for players to want to be at. And I think you see it with Nick Paul just just getting traded there. He's being a free agent and he's pretty much vocal saying, I want to come back. Right. So like it's a spot where guys want to go. Maybe they won't be paid as much as they would somewhere else, but they just, the lifestyle and the competitiveness of the team and fan base, I think draws people in. And then I think in Florida, they have a, with Barkov is one of the best players in the league. So is Huberto. I think that team, it sounds like they may be getting a new coach, or if it's already announced, I'm not 100% sure in Maurice, but, and I think he did a really good job in Winnipeg. So I think that division, those three teams in the division are going to be contenders. And I'm with you on New York, like that Scherzer, like every time you have a goalie who's that good, like you have to score on him to beat them. Right. So I'm with you on New York. They got a good young back end. They got returning players up front and a goalie who arguably is right there with Vasilevsky in being the top. But I don't see. And you can also look at Carolina, right? Carolina is again a team that wears their heart on their sleeve. Their coach is a workout machine. It competes, like makes his team compete like hell. They were a group of young guys, competitive, upbeat, up tempo players, offensive. I think they have good goaltending as well. I don't know if much changes on the Eastern front. I think on the West, there may be a little bit different scenario. I think for me, I think I have Colorado again. You have a good, I don't know what they're going to do in net, but the players themselves are highly talented and not much is probably going to change. Obviously they have some UFAs to deal with, but I like the way that St. Louis plays. I think Vegas should be a team that does better than what they have. And I think Minnesota is a team that's sort of right there as well. They get a good young Russian as well that is one of the top players in the league. So I think the Western side maybe will be shuffled a bit in the come playoff time. But on the Eastern front, I think you're going to see probably the same or a lot of the same teams that are that we saw this year. What do you got for out West?
Yeah, we speak a lot of the same language. I like Minnesota too. They're a gritty, tough team. They got a young guy, Marco Rossi, coming up. His draft pick, 2019 first rounder. He had a pretty good year in the AHL last year, knocking on the door. So they got some young talent to inject into the lineup. I like the way they play as well. They can play offensive because the West is that tough. It's big body, tough hockey. So I think it's like, whoever has the best combination of that plus some skill to score, you know, to be able to play some of these, you see some of these games that are ball hockey games, 9-6 in playoffs. It's really important. Edmonton took a big jump this year, big leap. I like, you know, but they obviously have some things to touch up on. If we're talking about who's going to win the cup, I mean, I'm going to go out on a limb and just, I'm going to stick to one because like we can go down all the teams, but I would pick, I'm going to pick Vegas Golden Knights. I like their team. And I think with the new coach, new breathing space, I think it'll be, back to what they were when they first came in the league.
I agree with you. Like, I think Vegas is a team that's destined to do good things. They have a strong back end, veteran players up front that can score. Obviously the coaching change maybe is what they need, but I just think as a whole, the Western side is a little bit more wide open. And then on the East, I think you're going to see a lot of repetitive same teams, but again, Trempy, I'm glad you made it across the ocean. You're back in North America, back home in Fulton, New York. Enjoy your skates this week and developing the players. And if you can make a run up to London, by all means, I have a bed waiting for you and a spare set of clubs if you need them. But next week, we'll go over the draft. I know the draft is an upcoming thing. So we'll go over our draft, a little bit of a draft preview and what a draft is like in the mindset of a hockey player. But again, Trempy, as always, good catching up with you and enjoy your time at home with your family.
Thanks, brother. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. You can catch us out on the Shrimp and Civret Show on Twitter, Instagram. And you can check us out on our personal ones at Rob Shrimp and at Danny Civret. See you guys. Tune in next week on Tuesday.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Shrimp and Civret Show. Don't forget to subscribe to the Nation Network YouTube channel to watch all of our video breakdowns.
when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Are you ready for truly hydrated skin? Meet Hyaluronic Body Serum, a breakthrough in body care from Osea. It's clinically proven to instantly increase hydration by 161%. Their lightweight, fast-absorbing serum delivers 24 hours of nonstop hydration for silky, smooth skin without the sticky afterfeel. Osea's latest innovation combines the magic of their best-selling Hyaluronic C Serum with a new formula that's good for the whole body and 5 types of hyaluronic acid to target every layer of the skin. Osea is a woman-founded, women-led brand that's been crafting seaweed-powered products for nearly 30 years. The best part? Everything Osea makes is clean, vegan, cruelty-free, and climate-neutral certified, so you never have to choose between your values and your best skin. Treat your skin to clean, vegan skincare from Osea. Get 10% off your first order site-wide with code SUMMER at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code SUMMER.